Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big Footy Women's Podcast for 2017. With me tonight, as always, I have the effervescent Peter Holden from Girls
Pod. Effervescent?
That's right, I'm using big words.
Am I Schweppes or something? Have we got a deal going on?
If only, if only. And also joining us tonight, I have the ebullient L joining us yet again.
Possibly. Did you just call me the pride of South Australia, L?
No, no, I didn't. No, no, in fact, I did not do that. So, if the umpiring had been a little bit less one-sided, then perhaps we'd be having a slightly different discussion. But, the commentary had been even slightly less one-sided. I'm not entirely sure that the commentators didn't get the game. Anyway.
I'm sensing that you're jaded, but I guess we'll get to that section later.
So as always, when we do these podcasts, guys, I like to talk about things that caught our eye on the weekend. And Peter, you've got a fairly big one from the weekend, I think.
GWS and Fremantle, which was a draw, 43-all. But to come out of that game, a $10,000 fine for the Fremantle Dockers, $5,000 of that suspended for wearing the wrong uniform.
Mm. Well, the way I'm told it's happened here is that they apparently were told by the AFL specifically that they couldn't wear that particular uniform. Now, the fine appeared, according to the AFL website, the Dockers wore their away strip after they were directed to wear the all-purple combination that was issued. They were told that last week, apparently, so they kind of flew in the face of that.
It's kind of weird, isn't it, that they got fined for wearing their away strip at an away game when they should have wore their home strip at an away game, which is just, confusing because of all these alternative jumpers, because GWS's home jumper has a predominantly white back. Can we just go back to the good old days of footy where your home team, you wore the black shorts, away team, you wore the white shorts? It was just so much simpler.
And everyone had one jumper.
Yes, yes.
I don't know. I never understood the whole clash thing, because I never had any trouble watching North Melbourne play Hawthorn on a black and white TV. So, I don't know.
Let me tell you, it is all about the money. They cottoned on to what the EPL have done with all these different Guernseys, and they've gone, oh, great, the really addictive fan won't buy one jumper, they'll buy two, three, four jumpers. It's a way of getting money out of your wallet.
Mm. So, apparently, at quarter time, the Giants changed their shorts, apparently.
When I was watching the game, it made bugger all difference to me. I couldn't tell what was up and down. It was actually quite frustrating as a spectator. And, I'm a bit new to all of this sort of watching other teams thing. I've been a very one-eyed Crows supporter for my whole life. So when I'm trying to watch other teams and identify individual players, it was very, very difficult. Everybody just looked like they was playing for the same team. And I didn't get a sense from the game that it affected the play too much. The girls out there looked like they knew who they were kicking and passing to. But as a spectator, it was very frustrating.
Mm. They made someone drive back to Blacktown to pick up the shorts and take them back. So, fun stuff there. Elle, what caught your eye on the weekend?
A young lady by the name of Mifsud.
Melbourne.
I think she's a Melbourne girl. Holy crap, was she on fire in the Melbourne game. Very strong up four. She played a really good role in the delivery down to the Melbourne forward line, up the centre-half forward, up the ground, transitions in defence. I was very impressed with her. She looks very dangerous. Looked like she had the ball on the string. I guess a general comment over the four games, I found that tactically, it felt the games were much more structured and free-flowing. The Dogs Melbourne game, the GWS Free game, the Lions Magpies game, very free-flowing, high scoring, lots of action. The Crows Carlton, just a bit of a grind. It was good to see. I guess the weather had a bit of an impact on that game. But a lot more action this week, a lot more good, solid delivery into the forward line with the exception of Collingwood, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Well, what caught my eye this week was the TV ratings. For some of you might know that I track these fairly regularly. TV ratings for Saturday night were were down 30% on the previous week. We're trying to attribute it off to the AFL men's season kicking off. This game was played after. This wasn't up against anything. It was after the Bulldogs Melbourne game that was played as a curtain raiser. The GWS Fremantle game and the Brisbane Collingwood game both rated fairly low, 33,000 and 25,000 respectively, on pay TV. I think we're starting to see a settling down of maybe a truer picture of where we're going to be with the women's game.
Yeah, I expected a peak and expected to slowly start to tail off, and it'll probably dip again when it comes to the last round once those teams that can't make the finals, their supporters start to lose a little bit of interest. But the reason I reckon that Saturday night's game, Bulldogs Melbourne, would have taken a hit in the audience, and maybe even true of the Lions Collingwood one, is both of them were up directly against the first night of Super Netball, which aired from 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time through to 11 p.m. at night. So it was this big 6-hour programming of the brand new netball competition. And I've got a feeling quite a few women, female, and even male supporters would have been going across to 9GEM just to sample that and see what the opening night of that was like.
The Vixens Magpies going there rated 123,000. So it's possible a few people were watching that.
Well, interestingly, I think that the Crows and Carlton game, they were at capacity again down at Theberton Oval, despite the rain as well. Oh, maybe it wasn't capacity, but it was certainly comparable to the last game. I had 9,000, I think, supporters. So that might be something to do with the momentum of the Crows and the emotion running high with Big Tex and Aaron Phillips up forward and everybody's just getting on board. But I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see how that plays out.
Well, that brings me to another point. Some of the crowd estimations on the weekend were a little bit out there. The 5,500 that was estimated for Brisbane Collingwood at a 3,000 capacity stadium is a fun one. I'm not entirely sure how they've arrived at that figure, or whether someone's mistyped 2,500 for 5,500. I did see someone say something on Twitter that there was some temporary stuff set up, whether it was temporary grandstanding or what the story was there. I have no idea. But either way, to get 5,500 into a 3,000-seat stadium, a little bit...
Well, I should say 3,000 capacity and with no seating. There was no seating there. But they did put in the temporary stuff on the side where the cameras were pointing away from.
Oh, so they did.
We didn't get to see a bit of the crowd on that side. I reckon they're probably, from what pictures I've seen, I reckon there would have been maybe 2,000 or 3,000 possibly on that side. But that said, on the opposite side to where the camera was facing, at times you could see there was maybe, there was one row along the fence. It wasn't like 2 or 3 rows back. So, yeah, 5,500, I look at it going, I might be generous and give you 4. 5,500, I don't think.
It does seem to be a little high. The GWS Fremantle game was given 4,000, which I was a little bit dubious about watching the game, but when they, on the rare occasion that they panned around behind where the cameras were sitting, that grandstand was full, was absolutely chockers. So it's entirely possible that there were 4,000 at Blacktown, so who knows?
Theberton Oval, 9,500. Again, that just looks great on TV, Theberton Oval. It looks fantastic. But it throws up the question as well, is that of grand final venues. Let's say that either Adelaide or Brisbane continue through and make it to the grand final. Whoever finishes on top has the hosting rights. The AFL said it won't be a Melbourne scenario like for the men's. It'll be whoever finishes on top gets it. Adelaide scenario looks fairly easy. That Saturday, March 25th, Adelaide Oval is vacant, so it's there if they want to use Adelaide Oval, or I guess they could maybe look at a smaller venue like Norwood, for example.
22,000 capacity in Norwood there.
Yep. The situation for the Brisbane Lions is a little bit more interesting and very tricky. For the Lions, the gap is free, but the situation is that same day, Gold Coast host the Brisbane Lions at Metricon at 7:30 at night. So the scenario is, if Brisbane have hosting rights, do you play it at the Gabba and expect Lions fans to then quickly travel 2 hours down from the Gabba to Metricon, or do you have the Lions home grand final played at Metricon? as the curtain raiser to the Suns and the Lions. That'll be tricky.
Mm. I mean, it could be held in Melbourne as well. Yet, just saying.
Well, if Carlton or Melbourne extract the digit and take Adelaide and Brisbane out along the way. But I actually just had a chat on the phone yesterday with Caitlin Ashmore, star Brisbane Lions player, and she's absolutely thrilled about what's coming up in a week and a half time. The Adelaide Crows host Brisbane Lions, and would you believe it, by perfect luck, hopefully by that stage, both teams will be 4-0 undefeated under lights Saturday night at the parade nationwide on 7. Talk about a scenario.
That's going to be a very big game indeed. All right, I can't see any reports from the weekend. Peter, are you aware of any, Elle?
Yes, Barclay was given a week and she decided to take it. Cinder Barclay from GWS. I can't recall one of them, but I know Laura Jurea for rough conduct was offered a reprimand and elected to take it.
All right. Let's get stuck into the games from the weekend. And the first one, of course, was Saturday morning. GWS playing Fremantle out at Blacktown. And winning that game in the... Well, drawing, rather. It was the first draw for the women's competition. And I did hint that this might be a possibility in last week's podcast, Peter, as a joke.
Get the tape! Get the tape!
That's right. But...
absolute fluke, Jason.
I did say that this would be hilarious if someone... if these two teams draw...
You know what the most annoying thing is? Everyone like me that's written their round three preview leading into this game, you're all right at going, finally, one of these teams will come away with a win, while one will be winless for the year. And you're like, oh, great. Yeah, it's that just blew that.
L, apparently you watched this.
I did watch this. I really enjoyed this game. And as I said before, I'm learning to love other teams that aren't the Crows. It's a very odd feeling. It started off being a little bit of a scrappy affair. There wasn't a lot of ball movement, but by the second half, my geez, the game just opened up. There was a lot of free running, big long kick, good deliveries into the forward line. There was a really good goal in the second quarter by Ashley Shark. There was a couple of funny goals from silly free kicks for both teams with 50-metre penalties. So there was a lot of opportunities for scoring. I was impressed with Donlan. She worked very hard in the centre. She's the Fremantle captain, I believe. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Oh, yes. a couple of big injuries in that game too. There was McWilliams did a knee, I think. And there was a shoulder to...
Haynes.
I reckon it was Tia Haynes, was it?
Yeah, Haynes did a shoulder. Davidson did an ankle.
Collarbone, yeah.
Oh, collarbone. So that I guess that was interesting, but it didn't seem to really affect the game. It just got more desperate as it got on. And desperate, I mean by the girls just went in there, got harder. Antonio was very busy delivering to the forwards. And Ashley Sharp, very impressive with some quick snaps and goals. It was just free-flowing. Towards the end of the third quarter, a bit of fatigue set into the girls. It looked like they'd spent a lot of energy in the intensity of the game. But after the three quarter time break, they came back in the last quarter. What a finish! Just a really good high scoring game, and lots of really tough ball gets right at the end of that fourth quarter. The crowd really worked it up. I was very impressed from the Blacktown crowd. And it just was a bit of a nail-biting finish. GW worked really, really, really hard. And after a few injuries to Fremantle, just a desperate finish from both teams. It was a good game. I was really entertained. Really, really impressed with Donlan. And even went off with a blood rule there for a bit, but back on the field and had a really big impact on the game.
13 scores. Sorry, Pete. Go on.
I was going to say, yeah, Karen Dunnellan, who they nickname Juddy, and is also captain of the WA state side. But I just wanted to ask, Al, how big was it for, players like Swanson, 16 disposals for GWS, and Antonio, like you mentioned, both of those players had been out, Antonio through suspension, Swanson through injury, yeah, to have those type of classy players back in the side for both teams?
Mm. Well, yeah, I think that probably the comments from last week, or what we saw from last week, was that that difficulty to sort of transition from the back line, through the midfield into the forward line, and you can see how much of an impact someone like Antonio has on the game. In 43 points, I think I said last week I was probably bullshitting out of my ass, but the Crows game was a high scoring game. You look, 43 points, 43 points. It's 86 point game. To score 86 points in reduced time quarters, that's comparable to a men's game in which we know moves much faster with more players. So that just is, I think, illustrates how important someone like Antonio is.
13 scoring shots to 8. Looks like Fremantle failed to put him away in the third quarter on the scoreboard. So, something for them to learn. They go on to play Adelaide at Fremantle Oval next week, Fremantle. So, nice big game there. Hopefully, a good crowd again. And the Giants, they're off to play the Lions again at South Pine, where no doubt we'll get a crowd of 5,500. So.
Donald Trump said it was 250,000. It was huge.
It was huge.
It was the biggest crowd ever for a football game. All right, the next game was the Brisbane Collingwood game, played at South Pine, as we've ascertained earlier, with a somewhat mythological crowd in attendance. Elle, I think you watched this. Pete, did you watch this one as well?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I caught the second half of that. So, but I'll let Al lead off.
Why not?
Well, it was interesting. There was a lot of chatter, so I watched the TV broadcast, and there was a lot of talk about how hot it was, right? And I call a bit of wank on that because these players are made up of teams. Sorry, these teams are made up of players from all around the country, and these people know humidity. They've been trained. They're not elitist elite yet, but they know that. So I think a lot of the commentary was made about the heat, but it looked like it did impact the players on both teams, and their ability to sort of finish off this game. But we saw towards each quarter the skills kind of tapered off a bit, and I think that was because of the conditions. Again, we saw Mo Hope, double, triple teamed at some point, pretty much all points of the game. It looked like it was a deliberate attempt to play a bit more up the field to free her up a little bit, and also to get the ball down to the other Collingwood forwards. I think that a lot's been made of Mo Hope, but she did a lot of work before she injured her ankle, knee. You help me out here, Pete. What did she hurt herself?
I think it was the ankle, yeah.
And I think there's just too much focus on her making goals or getting the scores on the point. But if you look really critically at her hands are really good. She knows where the goals are. She knows where her players are. She can make those little touches, those little taps that aren't, you don't see them on the champion data. You don't see them on the score sheet. So she was trying to guts out Steph Gyochi again. My God, what a workhorse in the center. But how can you go past old mate? Old mate was Sabrina Fredericks. Is that her name?
Sabrina Frederick Traub.
Oh, jeez. What, I've got a bit of a girl crush, to be honest. She's just such a power centre half forward in the ruck, anywhere she is. Great hands, great touch, can kick the ball very accurately in a long way. So she was definitely had an impact on the game. Do you know what her final stats were, Jason, for the
On
game?
offhand, no, she kicked she only
No.
kicked one goal, but I don't have the rest of the stats to hand.
So there was a couple of really interesting points in the game where, the wind was in Brisbane's favour and Collingwood scrapped and got a quick goal. And it was a very, very entertaining game to watch. Well, that's all I got.
I've got the stats there for you for Sabrina Frederick Traub. 12 disposals, 9 kicks, 3 hand passes, 3 marks, 1 hit out, 1 goal.
Emma Zelke had a good game there as well, by the look of it,
Oh.
stats-wise.
Unbelievable. 13 disposals, 9 kicks, 4 hand passes, 2 marks, 8 tackles, and I reckon half of them came in the dying stages of the match. She just, anyone that had a black and white jumper that was moving with the ball. She latched onto it, just threw herself at everyone in the dying moments, and I reckon was probably the difference between the Lions winning or losing.
There was that fantastic running goal by Kate McCarthy, who I think she had like four or five bounces from, you know, 60 out. I heard she's an elite runner, also played touch footy, so she looked on fire. What a great touch.
And has a pacemaker.
Yeah, that's really? A surprise for me, yes. That she's got a pacemaker. Yes.
Wow. She was blowing hard after that goal, don't you worry, far out.
Yeah, but she knows she usually kicks that. That's the one on the highlights rule. Don't worry about that. Yeah. That was tremendous of her. Jessica Wuchner almost did the same thing a couple of minutes later, but unfortunately, Wilshire kind of ran out of gas with 35 metres to go and just dribbled the kick forward and only scraped through for a point.
Again, the team losing had more scoring shots here this weekend. Pies had 8-7. So a little bit inaccurate in the last quarter there when it was there to be won.
If I just quickly pick up on the point earlier about Mona Hope about struggling at the moment, she's only got, I think, 10 disposals for the season and only got that one goal. We know now officially Collingwood season's blown. You're not going to have three losses and make the grand final. It's not mathematically possible. Mm-hmm. If I was the Collingwood coaching staff, I'd say, look, Mo needs a bit of confidence. Throw her in the middle. Throw her in the back line. Just throw her somewhere where she's going to get hands on the ball. Tell Mo, don't worry about scoring goals. Don't worry about it. Just get your hands on the footy. Just find a little bit of confidence back. And it allows you at the same time to try a different combination in the forward line. So, you know, the rest of the season may be shot, but start planning for next year. Start throwing around who you think might be able to do a job. Try some different things. Don't just try the same thing of Mo in the forward line and triple teaming, because you're not going to gain anything from it once the season's shot. You might as well throw her on the ball, get a bit of confidence back into her and, you know, build her up again for next year.
The Lions off to play the Giants at South Pine on the weekend. Collingwood off to play the Bulldogs in the Saturday night game this week. So both sides hoping for a win there. The Dogs surprising everyone, I think, at the moment with how winless they are.
It was an interesting game, you know. I think, in contrast to the Dogs Crows game the week before, you know, the Dogs were certainly much more disciplined this week. But you know, this I think last week we commented on the you know, the scoring shots and the lack of goals. So there was lots of points kicked, but so no lack of opportunity, but you know, not enough conversions. So we saw a bit of that this week. But geez, if they start kicking straight. So dangerous. They've got so much potential for scoring in that forward line. Absolutely fantastic. So we saw a bit of that more this week. It was actually a really good classic game of footy. Lots of long kicks, really big marks, and it was relatively free flowing. I thought.
All right. Well, Pete's got.
Am I the only one who watched this game?
I did. But it's a frustrating thing, isn't it, for the Bulldogs? Second week in a row, they've got out of the blocks well in the first quarter. They've got out early. They've had shots on goal, but they keep missing. They just don't have a excluding Brennan, who was out injured this week. They don't have a recognised forward down there. They've just kind of had this patchy forward line of part-timers, and it's showing on the scoreboard. I mean, when people were talking up the likes of Wilds and I think McDonald hasn't played a game yet, but it was a forward at Darabin. I kept pointing to the stats and keep saying, look at these women. These women have kicked some goals against lower sides in the Premier Division and the VFLW, but they haven't kicked goals against top sides, and that's the telltale sign. If you don't kick goals against top sides where the chances are few and far between, it doesn't really show how good you are. It doesn't show that you really made the grade. And this is the problem. Their whole forward structure was really around Katie Brennan. Now that she's gone down, they're relying upon the likes of Blackburn and Carney and Lambert. Lambert had a very quiet game to run out of the midfield, run and gun type of shots on goal. But the thing is, and the opposition have been smart, they've been forcing Blackburn and Carney not only out wide, they're having to do a lot of their work at the half back line. So they're not even able to get forward to get that flying shot on goal.
I thought that Melbourne were really good tactically. They were very slow, very deliberate of their delivery into the forward line. And I think that made the Bulldogs a bit sort of anxious, and they just sort of held that intensity back. And when it happened both times, actually, when the ball did get into the 50, both forward lines were able to kind of to keep it in really quite well. So there was a lot of free-flowing transition from forward to forward, but Melbourne were much more deliberate, and I think that frustrated them. I will say that I was impressed with Cranston. She's very, very strong and forward, and if you've got Misfit up in the centre-half forward area with the strong mark and good kick, that they look very, very dangerous with Cranston and Misfit. Melbourne, that is.
Well, the D's obviously winning that game Saturday night there by 24 points in the end. So good.
14.
Sorry, I can't do maths, apparently.
Look, do, fella Carl.
I'm not Pythagoras, all right? It's not how this works.
Lucky you've got a radio voice, that's what I'll say.
Well, and sexy looks to go with it, don't you worry. Yes, 14 points to the D's, who will go on this week to face Carlton in a doubleheader with the JLT Series game at Casey Fields. So wear your raincoats and lightning conductors and try and stay out of the breeze.
Bring a tent.
And the Western Bulldogs will go on to play Collingwood at the Witten Oval on Saturday night in the televised game for the weekend. So, Pete, you've got to leave us.
Yes, but just my quick thoughts on the Adelaide versus Carlton. Carlton, very stiff. They had control of most of the match, but then once it turned around to the final quarter, they just had nothing left to give. Probably the biggest part where Carlton came undone was the third quarter when Breanna Davey and Daniel Hardiman came off the ground for part of the quarter each, and you could just sense once they left the ground, the momentum started to swing around and the Crows gained confidence. And then, well, yeah, I'll let Al talk about that Aaron Phillips goal.
Oh, I also want to say, I thought that Ange Foley did a really good job shutting down Vesio. She was very quiet in the latter stages of the game and couldn't get her hands on the ball and had very little impact. So I guess that was probably either a tactical, you know, genius move or just a series of events, you know.
I think it might have been Hatchard, originally on Vesio and was getting beaten. And Beck Goddard wasn't afraid to say, this is not working, I'm going to swap it around. And it worked. Anyway, cheerio to you both. It's a privilege, and I'll catch you all again next week.
No worries. Ya. Thanks, Pete. So, El, you went to the game on the weekend?
I didn't actually. I was having a few beverages with my girlfriends in Aldinga Beach, but I did catch the game on TV and I watched it again after. Did you make it down to the Everton Oval?
No, unfortunately, work prevented me from heading down there. I didn't actually finish work until after the game had started, and with the crowd that was expected there, I kind of went, no.
I was going to text you and rub it in, but I thought that it would be a bit harsh, and you probably wouldn't have done the same thing to me because you're a nice fellow.
That and I don't have your phone number. So, your overall thoughts for the weekend that we've just seen?
For the Crows game in particular,
yeah.
Or just the
for,
all
for
games?
The Crows, yeah.
I was really impressed with Cromie for the Crows. I think that this was her first start for the Crows. Come into the team. I think she's wish Pete was on the line, but she's from the SA League, so she's come up through the ranks and had a big impact back. She just seemed to be in the right spot every time, took a few really good marks on the back and protected the area and cleared the ball out for the Crows, so she was really important in defence, and I think they structured that around her. I was very impressed with Davey with a lot of her penetrating kicks into the 50, and that was a big difference for Carlton to get those balls up forward. What else did I see? The game, the Crows started out with a bit of lack of intensity, and I think that in line with what Pete and I were discussing before, when there were a couple of changes through the game, the Crows were able to sort of swing that momentum around. Tex Perkins up forward, you know, we talk a lot about her goal kicking, but she showed that she's actually pretty ferocious in a tackle and very quick off the mark. That big girl can move. She put on a massive tackle. I can't remember who it was on to put a lot of forward defensive pressure on. And it wasn't anything. It was just a tackle all over the boundary line, but just stamping her authority physically there. Randall down back for the Crows. got a lot of touches. She was very important. It was a very physical third quarter, actually, and both teams threatened all game in that quarter. It was just very intense, very low scoring third quarter. Two injuries to Carlton in that third quarter, I think Harton for Carlton. And that seemed to make a bit of a difference. And there was a couple of changes that had to happen. And I guess really the winning goal by Phillips early in the fourth quarter, and they just couldn't, Carlton just couldn't get their hands and get a clean possession up forward to their forward line. So, as I said before, yeah, Ange Foley did a good job shutting down Vesio and just took her out of the game. And Erin Phillips, 60-meter goal with a bounce, fantastic. Just knew where they were, heaved it away and to an open forward line. It was a fantastic finish, very exciting for the girls, and I'm really happy for them. They've done really well. I'm very sorry for you, Jason, that Carlton lost, but fantastic game. It was very entertaining to watch. But it was a bit frustrating because of the low scoring, but the Crows girls showed some pretty good guts and determination to get the win.
Indeed. Now, if we turn our attention to the ladder where the Crows are on top on percentage there, a very handy percentage at this time of the year, because it's probably more or less going to guarantee them a home final if they win another game. Brisbane coming in second there, also undefeated. Carlton dropped down to third. Melbourne also in third place on 2 wins with the Blues there. Those are probably the only realistic shots at having a final. Bear in mind that the final, there's only one final and it's only the top two, so you've got to be in that bracket. The Dogs have 1 win on the table. It is mathematically possible, of course, for them to win as long as no one else wins for the rest of the season. GWS, yet to have a win. They do have a draw. Again, you hate to throw mathematically possible out there, but I suppose they could pull the next 4 wins out and hope Adelaide and Brisbane don't win another game. Who knows? Fremantle in the same boat there, coming in 7th. Collingwood winless. I did call it last week. I told you they were cooked, and they are. I don't like being right. It's a burden I have to bear. But unfortunately, it's one when it comes to Collingwood, I'm more than happy. I'm not saying I'm filled with glee, but as a Carlton supporter, Collingwood winning a wooden spoon is vital to my self-interest.
Yeah,
so
I'll be pretty happy if I see Collingwood finish bottom.
It's up there with beating Adelaide, let me tell you, which hopefully I'll see in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, I'll take whatever I can get where the Pies are concerned. So
I feel like the bubble for the Crows might burst. I feel like there's just a lot of, a lot of momentum and emotion, even in the media and the crowd and the build-ups to the games, and you can see it in their faces. And it's almost like you want them to lose one to know what it feels like before they get anywhere near the finals so they can have a coping mechanism or learn what they need to learn. So I don't know. I think that if they're going to, the big challenge will be Brisbane.
That's some real Ross Lyon thinking there. I think he said the same thing about Fremantle, wanting to lose a game before they actually get to the end of the season. But yeah, I see the point. I see what you're saying.
And I think that and the Brisbane one, looking forward to that, I think at Norwood Oval, that might be the one. Look at just purely at the stats, the Crows, you'd think they'd walk all over the Dockers, but complacency is a bitch. But yeah, looking forward to that Crows Lions game, that'll be the telling result. Who do you think will finish top 1 and 2?
I think it's still, there's just so little that's known about the teams. Even now, we're 3 weeks in, and I honestly could not tell you who's going to finish top two at the moment. Brisbane look just way too polished for mine. I think they're definitely going to finish top. I think Adelaide, I don't know how they're going to go. They've got to travel up to Darwin for a game. They've got to go to Perth. Whether travel can beat them, I think really it's going to come down to whether they can cope with the travel. They've got Brisbane coming up. That's going to be a big game. They've got, where are we? They've got Melbourne.
Melbourne and Darwin.
And then they finish off playing Collingwood in Melbourne. So I think it's theirs to lose at the moment, really, both for Brisbane and Adelaide. I think they're top two. They're probably going to stay that way. I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of movement there. Carlton, you've got Melbourne this week. That's going to be a tough one. They've got the Dogs the week after that. I mean, that's going to be a tough one. They've got Fremantle in Perth the week after that. I mean, there's no easy games for Carlton. They've already beaten Collingwood, so, you know. It's and then they finish off against Brisbane, which fortunately for them is at Princess Park. So there's not a lot. And then for Melbourne as well. I mean, they're the real last contenders there. They were at Carlton this week. They've got GWS in Blacktown. I mean, that's not going to be a walkover, or not going to be the walkover we all thought it might have been in week one. Then they've got Adelaide, obviously in Darwin. And that could be anyone's game. We just don't know how the teams are going to go travelling. And then they finish off playing Fremantle in Melbourne. So I think Fremantle are going to drop off. I have this sense about this.
I'll tell you what, I've got my two new favourite players. So I've got Sabrina at Brisbane, and I've got my Alicia Misfit at, in Melbourne. And I'll be keeping an eye on those two. But I think they'll be playing pivotal roles in the latter half of the season, if they can stay fit, injury free, they're gonna do well and have a big impact on the finish. So it could be Melbourne Brisbane is my sense. I think Melbourne are in with they had the two big tough games to start with, and came through it really well. So I think it'll be Adelaide Brisbane. And Melbourne involved in the final.
I think one thing for sure, the loser of the Melbourne Carlton game on the weekend can probably rule themselves out of the finals altogether. And really, Adelaide with Fremantle on the weekend, I mean, they're not going to drop out of contention yet. Brisbane aren't going to drop out of contention yet. Really, it's going to come down to the Melbourne Carlton game as to whether there are further contenders to that top two. And if they draw, well, who knows? This week's games, though, Elle, Melbourne Carlton, Casey Fields. This is a double header, so if you're going, you're going to need a ticket. You're going to actually need tickets unless you're a member of the competing clubs, in which case you'll need your membership card. Who's going to win this for you?
I think Melbourne, because I think with their potent forward line, my favourite old mate, Alicia Misfit, if they can't shut her down, it's going to go Melbourne's way.
And me being a Carlton supporter, I'm going to say Carlton. But I like to think my team's a shot at winning everything, no matter how outlandish that chance is. I mean, if my club's in it, we're winning it. I don't care if it's a meat tray. I don't care if it's a football game or a meat tray. We're a shot at it. So, second game of the round, Brisbane have GWS at South Pine. Get your tickets in early for this one. Actually, it's free entry, but apparently thousands will go to this. But who's going to win?
Just make your own ticket and bring it in and punch it on the way.
That's right. Brisbane for me on this one, Elle. How about yourself?
Yeah, I agree. Brisbane, for the same reasons. Got big targets up forward and really good defensive pressure down back. And I don't think GWS have got the scoring potential to keep up with Brisbane.
I don't think it's a given. It's not a walkover by any stretch. You know, GWS are rapidly improving. But, I think Brisbane, their twin tools up forward in Frederick Torb and Taylor Harris, one or the other is going to fire on the day. So I think Brisbane for sure cementing their places in the top two. The Dogs have got the Pies on Saturday night, the game on 7 nationally. Who's going to win this one for you, Elle?
I'm going to pick an upset. I think Collingwood's going to do it. I think Collingwood are going to bring it home. I think, the game wasn't as terrible. I think because I pinned a lot of hope on Collingwood this year from what we'd seen from all of their marquee players. And I think that their time is coming, and I think it will be this weekend. Other than nothing to back that up other than gut feel. So I'm going to pick Collingwood.
Well, I think if they're going to win one, this is the one. I mean, this is their game to win. This is at Witten Oval, so it's in Melbourne. They can get some home crowd support behind them. The week after that, they travel to Perth to play Fremantle. The week after that, they've got GWS, so that might be an opportunity for them as well. And then they finish off against Adelaide, and I don't think they'll beat Adelaide. So I still think the Dogs will win this one, but the Dogs, if the Dogs don't get a forward back, then they might struggle here as well. The last game of the round, Fremantle versus Adelaide at Fremantle Oval. Fremantle with the home advantage. They did play well on the weekend in Blacktown against GWS. Home crowd behind them. Adelaide undefeated, though. El, you're going to say Adelaide, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a one-eyed supporter.
Of course you are.
You know, I wear an eye patch to my game. So, yeah, Adelaide will win. It'll be interesting to see how they travel, Adelaide. So, you know, Adelaide's in a interesting spot geographically. It's not like GWS travelling to Perth or Fremantle travelling to Sydney to play. So it's not as long distance and as many time zones. So it'll be interesting. It's probably the furthest they'll have to go and whether that'll have a bearing on the match. There's not a strong following for the Crows. We saw in Melbourne when they played the Bulldogs, I think we played there. There was quite a lot of Crows supporters in the crowd. So it'll just be interesting to have a different atmosphere and see how the girls, you know, as I said before, they're very emotionally charged and I think they feed a lot off of that. And if that's not there for them, what are they going to go to and draw on for their energy and their inspiration? So I wonder if that'll have an effect. But, yeah, the Crows by 17 goals.
17 goals. Eh? That's quite the margin. I think it'll be close. I think Fremantle play Fremantle have with Dunellan and in the side and Antonio back and other players that they have are going to be very competitive. I think Adelaide. I hate to say that they're due to lose one. I don't believe that teams are due to lose. Like, I don't think you're due to lose anything. Either you do or you don't. It's one of those things, but it's a danger game, if you like, for Adelaide.
Yeah.
Fremantle home crowd. Could be 10,000 people there if there's anything like last time. Plus I'm not an Adelaide supporter. I'm not a big fan of Adelaide. So, Frio for me. But so that takes us to the end of the round. You got anything else you want to add, El?
Only not related to the women's AFL, but Dan Vickerman, who's a Wallaby, retired Wallaby, passed away sadly yesterday. And I just wanted to say, if anybody needs somebody to talk to, you know, tap into Lifeline and Beyond Blue and have a chat with somebody. So just thoughts out to his family. That's pretty much it from me.
Our condolences. And when does your season start, Elf, for rugby?
We have the Buttercard Cup starting in mid-March. So the women will be playing a tennis side. I think we're starting at Elizabeth. We're moving to Brighton. We're moving all around the place. So if there's anyone interested in playing, pick up the phone, give SA Rugby a call, come and join in. So that's our pre-season. The men and women will play three rounds, and then we're in mid-April in full swing. So getting all excited and geared up. Should be a good one.
If you're interested in playing rugby, women's rugby in South Australia, or any kind of rugby in South Australia, you can visit the website at sarugby.com.au. And that's it for us for this week. Thanks very much, El.
Thank you, Jason, and go the Crows.
And thanks to Peter, who is off doing his own podcast for Girls Play Footy. You can hear them on the radio and their own podcast on girlsplayfooty.com.au and also on Radio RS Sport, I think. You can hear their podcast as well. Thanks very much, guys. We will see you on the forums or at the footy.
See ya.